Welcome to another episode of Pat and the Fat Man. We like to talk about movies, sports, and whatever else we feel like. I'm Pat.
And I'm the Fat Man.
We're coming at you with a continuation of our review of Rogers and His Rabbits. That's right. Who framed that Rogerist of Rabbits, Roger Rabbit?
You just love the English language, don't you?
I do. It's amazing.
Is it, though?
I can say stuff like, I adulted today, and everybody knows what it means. Right. And it's even like correct English now. Like, it's so malleable. It's like gold. Like actual gold, not like that 24 karat stuff. Like, you just bend it however you want. It's almost liquid.
Well, it is a language for drunk people.
Yeah, and it really is, like, it's hilarious because it makes it so much fun in real time, but it really, really screws anybody down the line. Just go read Shakespeare, right? None of it makes any sense.
right, in original Queen's English.
You got a translator for that because the language has changed so drastically over those years. Like, I mean, heck, I pick up, like, stuff from 100 years ago, it's still like, man, these people did not know how to talk.
And see, folks, this is how amazing we are. We've taken a movie like Who Framed Roger Rabbit, one of the most controversial movies that Disney has ever come out with, and now you have an English lesson.
Yeah, by Disney, we mean Touchstone.
Yeah, but I mean, it's all Disney characters. It was all done by Disney.
I mean, we've talked about that, but I don't know if we've ever actually looked that up. We can keep dying on this hill.
It's not really dying when nobody wins. I mean, it's just, oh, yeah. You know.
Produced by Walt Disney Pictures. A hybrid. Yeah, okay. All right. Primarily Disney production.
And I didn't go to a fancy university like some people.
I mean, it was not fancy, Bruce. You've been there.
Fancier than the community college I attempted.
Okay, you got me there. All right, so I believe where we left her off, we were unwilling witnesses to effectively a war crime played out in real time. Where a man slowly drowns a puppy.
It's worse than that. He disintegrated a puppy. Yeah. He didn't just drown it. Drowning means it fought. There was nothing he could do. It burned while it disintegrated. Wait,
were you just about to say drowning makes it fun? Is that what you said?
No,
you monster. You're a monster.
I did not. Oh my god, I did not say fun. Why are you like twisting my words? My god. Pat, we are on a webcam right now. I can see you, and I don't see your red hat.
Okay, puppy drowner. Drowning makes it fun, but disintegrating is just evil.
I did not say fun.
What did you say?
I said that we're fighting.
It's a fight. There's okay. A fight. That's a little less monstrous.
Oh my god.
It I'm really did sound like you said it didn't... made it fun.
Where's your brain right now?
Considering we saw each other in person 2 days ago.
Right. It's just the world getting back at us for separating again.
Yeah, war criminal. All right, so disintegrating, talking shoes that I guess it really wasn't screaming when he was disintegrating because he disintegrated its mouth first, which, I mean, that's horrifying in and of itself.
Right. Like, it was just whimpering and internally screaming, you know, with eyes looking right at the camera.
and the whole time the judge is smiling, which I wonder if on like review, Christopher Lloyd watched that and he was like, oh my God, people are going to hate me.
I don't know. I mean, because like if you look at his body of work, he's a very odd man. I mean, he when you see him in interviews and whatnot, he's a very nice man. But like his choice of work, I mean, from Taxi to his spot in Sin City and Uncle Fester.
Doc Brown is the one we all know him for.
Doc Brown. Yeah, Doc Brown is probably the most, you know, family-friendly one that I can mention.
The guy that kidnaps the teenage boy and brings him back in time. Oh, Well, then he gets shot up by Libyans because he's stolen their plutonium. Okay.
Oh. Yeah,
real stand-up guy, that Doc Brown.
How did he kidnap him? How did he he's kidnap a minor. That doesn't explain how he kidnapped him. He didn't force him into the car. It's... Now, he made him an unwitting accomplice.
Yeah, it's a theft of illegally acquired plutonium, I guess.
And associations with terrorist groups.
Yes, yes.
Or group singular.
The Libyans.
But, you know, we're here to talk about Roger Rabbit, Pat.
I mean, I guess. I thought we were here to talk about war crimes. All right. So we see that. So Bob Hoskins' character, Eddie Valiant, has been slapped by the buxom Jessica Rabbit telling him.
Well, that happened before the execution.
Yeah. I hope you're happy. We get to see the chalk outline of Maroon's body crushed by a safe. You know, we get to see the cops who used to formerly work with Eddie screw with him a whole bunch. And then we get to see the judge and the weasels. Interesting scene, sets up a lot of characters, kind of sets up the, you know, dynamic as far as who's the bad guy, you know, who are the good guys, and kind of hones in on Jessica's involvement in all this.
Right. Next is what happens is we jump to Valiant returning to his office. And as he comes up the stairs, he sees this woman in short shorts, white short shorts, bent over a
baby carriage.
That's it. And he sees her straighten up, get a lighter out, and then bend back over as if going to light a cigarette. And because Valiant can't see the baby, he starts freaking out like, hey, wait a minute. And he gets it, pulls her back and realizes it's baby. Is his name Baby Herman?
Herman. Baby Herman. He's back on the screen.
Yep. Holding a stogie, a cigar.
Yep.
That's been lit. And she mentions how she's been trying to get him to quit, but he won't listen. And of course, the baby's got this. It's not this goo goo gaga voice. It's the rough, like New York, you know, rough man kind of talk.
Yeah, it's a rough New York dock worker, teamster,
taxi driver, you know,
cheller toots.
Right. Yeah. He says, what do you know? You got the IQ of a rattle. Just. And tells her to go away. He's got to talk to Valiant. And Valiant's like, oh, ladies man. He's like, oh, the problem is I got a 50-year-old lust at a 3-year-old's dinky.
Just the... I like Baby Herman character because he is just the ultimate expression of, like, infantilism infantilism. Being like an infant, basically. Uh-huh. I want what I want, and I want it now. But like as an adult, like if you were to bring a baby forward and make him an adult, what would he be like? And, you know, he's like a lot of men are today. Not listening to health advice, treating women like objects, thinking he could pay for whatever he wants to get.
Keep talking. I'm going to drink this beer.
Yeah, I know. He's just kind of this hilarious take on, you know, that kind of Hollywood personality. But, you know, beyond Hollywood, just that kind of, you know, male personality. It's just interesting that he's there to talk to Valiant.
Right. And he tells Valiant that the rabbit didn't do it. He wouldn't harm anybody. You know, he's a personal friend. Yada, yada, yada. He said the whole thing stinks like yesterday's diapers. And then he comes up with basically the first theory of why Roger Rabbit or anyone would want to kill Acme. Which is that Acme had promised Toons that when he died, he'd give Toontown to the Toons. You know, Valiant said, you know, well, did anybody see this will? And he goes, no, but he gave us his word. And Valiant's like, listen, man, if you believe a single word, any promise he would make, then you really didn't know him all that well. Kind of getting chippy with Valiant, Baby Herman goes, you know, I'm here because since you got him into trouble in the first place, figured you could help get him out. You know, of course, I could pay you. And at that moment, it was the thought that he was somebody cheap enough to be bought. He kind of gets mad at Baby Herman and takes his baby carriage and just rolls it down the hall. And as it reaches the stairs, the woman is coming up and the carriage runs into her and she falls down. The carriage kind of just wobbles a bit and Baby Herman loses his cigar and he looks over the edge, sees it on the floor, and then he starts crying like a baby.
My stogie! Yeah! My stogie! Where? Yeah, stereotypical cartoon baby crying over his cigar. Wait. Yeah.
Well, a French baby, maybe.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. That it's funny because there was a lot of controversy in that time frame about portraying characters smoking, right? Mm-hmm. You'll see in the old Warner Brothers cartoons and some of the other cartoons that cartoon characters will smoke. And that eventually that all got phased out into the massive anti-smoking campaign effectively that the U.S. went on that has affected the U.S. and somehow nobody else. Like, so much of our culture has gone everywhere else in the world, but the anti-smoking has not. Like, everywhere else, still full-blown committed to smoking like chimneys.
You know what's hilarious? Smoking may not have, but things like high fructose corn syrup, like in soda, has.
Yeah.
Because I remember a couple of years ago, I was on a cruise, and I went to Cozumel, and in the port area, we went to this little taco place, and I wanted a Coke, and on the Coke bottle was a little octagon warning label. And it's, you know, about, it was like warning about calories and whatnot. And I was like, holy crap, they actually do it.
Yeah. So it's an interesting scene because you see just how committed Eddie Valiant is to not working for Tunes, right? This idea that Baby Herman was going to pay him, you know, and he, I don't work for Tunes, right? Is, I believe, what he says, you know, before he pushes the stroller off onto the stick.
I think it's not just that. I think it was also, you know, the idea that he could be bought.
I think it was a little of both.
Yeah.
And Herman implying that he's the one who got Roger Rabbit in trouble and needs to get him out, combined with this concept of working for Tunes, which is, you know, we saw this back in the bar scene where he takes it out on the Eggman. Is just trying to eat his hard-boiled eggs at the bar. It's still weird to me.
It's gross.
Why? Why do you think that?
Hard-boiled eggs are gross. this is just, are we in Toontown?
I feel like this probably needs to be one of our zanier podcasts.
Is everybody taking crazy pills?
Yes. what is that from? Is that
Zoolander?
Zoolander, that's right. The gasoline fight. Such a great scene.
Oh my god.
Smoking kills, kids. Smoking kills. That was the whole vein of this interlude. Smoking kills. Maybe it takes a gas fight gone badly. But
I don't know where you're at right now.
I don't know. I think I'm somewhere between exhausted and dehydrated. I don't know.
I could definitely see dehydrated. That was a rough weekend for, even though we constantly drank. Like, there was no shortage of drinks.
None.
Anyways.
What are we talking about?
So Valiant goes into his office while you can hear the Baby Herman crying outside the door. Sits down at his desk and he opens up the paper, which of course talks about, you know, how Acme was murdered by jealous lover Roger Rabbit. As he sits down and he goes, it's not my fault. The rabbit got himself in trouble. All I did was take some pictures. And he takes a drink of iced tea.
Delicious.
From his glass and puts it on the paper.
The darkest of dark iced tea.
Kentucky iced tea, I'm sure.
So good.
Possibly from Tennessee.
So smooth as it rolls down the throat into the belly.
Iced what tea. Are you talking about?
for a good time, make it iced tea time.
You can get through 5 minutes of this movie.
It's what the people want, Bruce. I really don't know that, but
that's what you want, right?
Well, yeah, of course. I'm the one saying it, so of course it's what I want. I'm the one who's gone completely off his rocker, apparently.
Well, first step's admitting it.
Well, the second step is the second drink. Anyways, he puts the glass down and it effectively turns into a magnifying glass. And he gets to zoom in on, lo and behold, what's in Acme's pocket but the will. It's in his, what do you call it?
His coat pocket.
Yeah, it was in his coat pocket. That's right. So he sees the will. Is this on his pictures that he took?
So he first notices in the newspaper, because it's the picture that he took in the newspaper.
Right.
Then he puts the paper aside, brings out the actual photo, and breaks out an old magnifying glass from like an old briefcase, an old bag, and he sees it more clearly. And it says last will and testament.
Yep. So it turns out that baby Herman was actually telling the truth. There actually was a will. Baby was right.
And then you see it, just the camera's focused on his face, and he's just trying to ponder all the possibilities and everything that's going on. And then he goes, the hell with it. And so he goes and pulls down his Murphy bed, and you know, he's kicking off his shoes as he sits down on the bed, and then he goes to lay down, you know, to take a nice iced tea nap.
Just like we all like to do after using our iced tea glasses, yes. Magnifying glasses, and making important discoveries. It's time for a nap.
Reading is stressful.
And hard.
When he's sitting down on the bed, you could see that there's somebody clearly in the bed. And then when he goes to lay down and he rolls over, he comes face to face to Roger Rabbit. They look at each other and they both scream, jump up.
Like, you gotta consider like how surprising that would be, right? Like, you pull your Murphy bed down. It's not Murphy in that bed. It's a cartoon rabbit who's on the run for murder. First of all, how did you get in here? And second of all, what are you doing in my bed?
And he says he got in through the mail slot because he figured since he was wanted for murder, he'd better wait inside. And then Bob Hoskins, Eddie Valiant, goes, no kidding, just talking to you could get me a rap for aiding and abetting. Wait a minute. Who knows you're here? And then who did you tell? And he goes, oh, nobody. He goes, well, you see, I didn't know where your office was. So
the whole time he's like throwing his arms in different directions, pointing out the people. It's like, oh, yeah, I went to the newspaper person first and then to the butcher shop and the baker. And they didn't know. But the liquor store guy, he knew.
Because that's where you get your iced tea.
The iced tea depository shop, also known as the liquor store. So many brands of iced tea. So little time. Brownest of the brown liquors.
Focus.
Okay, I'm back. Okay, what are we talking about, iced tea?
AA, Pat. AA.
It's for quitters. Literally. It's what it's for. It's a wonderful organization.
So Valiant tries to throw Roger Rabbit out of his office. And, you know, of course, Roger's not having it. He's like, you know, bracing himself against the door, you know, in the door frame. And then Valiant decides he's going to try a different tag and try to pull him away. And he starts stretching him like a Stretch Armstrong.
Taffy. Yeah.
Taffy. And where he tells him that Roger's telling him, you know, he couldn't kill anybody. His whole purpose in life is to make people laugh. And he says, you know, sure, when you saw the pictures, you know, I got a little steamed. That's why I tried to go find Jessica at the ink and paint club, but she wasn't there. So I sat down and I wrote her a love letter. And Valiant's like, wait a minute, you're telling me in a fit of rage, you wrote your wife a love letter? And he goes, so I guess the old lipstick and mirror thing wasn't your style. And he goes, lipstick, yes. Mirror, no. I found a nice clean piece of paper and wrote her this letter. And he goes and talks about, you know, how, you know, he loves her. Let him count the ways.
Count the ways.
1,000. 2,000. You know, you can just imagine, you know, it's just, that's it. It's just counting from there on.
You know, all of this is just, it's all tune stuff, right? And right. So him grabbing the door, him like being pulled, stretched out like taffy, the you know, what he says about the love letter, what he does about you, it's all very standard cartoon trope stuff, but it's being acted out with a human. It's just fun. Like, it's fun to watch the human get to play with a cartoon effectively. and do normal weird cartoon stuff with them.
The physical effects are impressive, not as impressive as the scene coming up when we get back to the bar.
Oh yeah.
You know, more importantly, it's that even though he takes this seriously and it's a serious thing, he can't help making it toony. It's just in his nature. You know, like a cat biting you when it wants to show you affection. You're like, that's, you know, that doesn't make sense to you as a human, but apparently to a cat, it makes perfect sense.
I mean, people deserve to be bit, apparently, from the cat's perspective.
Right.
That's how you show love and affection.
So then the conversation changes to Valiant not having a sense of humor and Roger trying to, for the first time, say, what turned you into such a sourpuss? Roger tries to sit in the chair opposite of Eddie Valiant. Eddie sees him and goes, get out of that chair. That's my brother's chair. And what's really cool here is if you stop, you can see the handprint left because the chair hasn't been used. So it's all dusty. And Roger had tried to touch the back of the chair. He could see the handprint. You know, Eddie tells him that's his brother's chair. And Roger goes, yeah, where is your brother? He looks to be like a sensitive and sober fellow.
And sober fellow. It's just such a, like, it's such a dig on Eddie, but it's made in such a cartoonish way.
Oh, sure. Like,
yeah, big drunk. Where's your brother? He looks like he could handle this case.
Which is funny because Valiant's like, why'd you come to me in the first place? I'm the guy that got you in trouble. And he goes, because everybody knows that if you're a toon and you're in trouble, you go to the one place that's safe for toons, which is Valiant and Valiant.
Right. And that harkens back to the original scene we get in the office where we go through all of those newspapers and we see, you know, how many times the Valiant brothers save toons from problems, especially in the real world. And, you know, kind of were heroes to the toons. And the fact that Roger Rabbit, who is apparently a star right now, right, willing to spend where the studio Maroon's Cartoons is willing to spend thousands of dollars a day on this guy who can't get his lines right. You know, big name star still thinks, number one, it's Valiant and Valiant, but still thinks the Valiant brothers are, you know, the best gig in town, that they're the way to go. Like he said, that everybody knows, you know, the safest play for a tune in trouble is the Valiant and Valiant. Which is interesting because, I mean, he does also know that Eddie Valiant took those pictures. Like those two things are not incongruous, but to a tune, they could be. Like, who knows how their minds work?
Well, again, yeah, it's very simplistic. There's no holding the grudge there. There's, I'm going to do the thing that's going to make me happy, which is that I don't get convicted of murder.
I don't get dipped.
I'm not going to worry about how I got here.
Yeah.
I'm only worried about where I'm going. After the comment about his brother being a sensitive and sober fellow, Valiant goes, that's it, I'm calling the cops. And so Roger decides to play it up and go, oh, that, you know, that's the thanks I get. You know, I come to you for help. And what do? Turn me in. No, don't feel guilty for me. So long and thanks for nothing. And you see he opens the door and throws himself inside and closes and slams it shut.
Slam.
And Valiant goes, that's the closet.
Oh, such a tune gag. This is the thanks I get. That's the closet.
So Valiant, you know, goes over to the closet, turns the light on, opens the door, and you just see a hanging trench coat and hat in there. And he starts looking around the closet to see if he can find Roger. Roger just pops up from inside the coat and hat and does like a cartoony Dick Tracy thing. He goes, Eddie Valiant, you're under arrest. Valiant throws him out of the closet. And you go, well, Roger Rabbit cuffs him and himself.
You're under arrest.
So Valiant throws him out of there and he's like, you idiot, I don't have keys to these cuffs.
Which I do have to ask a question on this one. Like, why don't you have keys to those cuffs? Like, if you have those cuffs, why don't you have keys to them? What happened to those keys?
The only thing I could think is that they're a set of keys that only cops can open. It doesn't make sense, but it's the only theory that I could think of. So that way you have the guy cuffed and you bring him in and then the cops are the ones that can unlock him.
I hadn't thought about that. I just assume he lost it, I guess. But like, it doesn't. That's one of those little, I feel like, could be bad writing, but really isn't big enough to really qualify. Like, it's just, yeah, okay, he doesn't have the keys to the cuffs, fine.
Right, right. It's definitely, I think that. I think, you know, if you're trying to find a reason, you're thinking a little bit too much into this, especially when some of the things that happen when you talk about toons in the real world, especially what's going to happen. Right, yeah,
like
on.
You've already pushed the I believe button on that. why can't you just give me, I don't have the keys to these cuffs?
Who's worried about the bleeping keys? So it's at that moment that you hear police sirens. And of course, Roger wants to go see what's happening outside. So he runs to the window, dragging Eddie around the whole way. And as you mentioned before, these are all practical things and they didn't have CGI and things like that. So Bob Hoskins had to throw himself against things here. Real actor stuff.
Like that, to pretend that he was being dragged along. He was having to. I'm sure there was a lot of physical coaching on that. Oh, no, that didn't look quite right. You didn't. You look like you were running. You should be looking like you're being dragged.
Well, you got to throw yourself against this thing and you got to do it in such a way that it's convincing. And really, the only way to do that is to actually do it. So get ready. You're going to get hurt.
Yeah, this is not going to be super fun. We'll give you some padding inside your suit.
And when he looks outside, he sees the weasel, the Toon Patrol, the weasels coming in, and they don't parallel park. They just rear end one other vehicle, leave the car, you know, kind of cockeyed. It's just such a
cartoon. Yeah. Bloom, bloom. Oh, Toons.
And so Roger sees them trying to come into the building. He's like, it's the Toon Patrol. So he takes off the other direction like a scared dog, like a frantic dog trying to run away from something, even though he's tied to the leash. And so he tries to run under the bed, dragging Eddie Valiant with him. You hear a dong. The Murphy bed goes up and they're just running all over the place.
Like a dog. Except he's a rabbit. So he's moving fast, like he's getting chased by a weasel.
Roger tries to hide in the desk drawer, the bottom drawer, comes out the front top. Remember,
yeah,
I was never here. So the weasels come knocking on the door. Let us in, Valiant. I'm going to point this out real quick. So the camera is pointed at the door and you can see the shadows of the weasels. But if you look to the right of the door, there's this giant bird on a pedestal. And I thought about this and I looked it up and I was correct. That is a representation of the Maltese Falcon.
Oh, that's cool.
Which is another old timey kind of whodunit kind of movie.
Yep.
I tried watching it once. I fell asleep. I know. I feel bad because it's like in the top five of AFI's top 100 movies of all time. And I was just like, no, I can't do it.
Can't do it. Can't. They're still just talking. Oh, there's so much talking. When are they going to stand up and do something? Oh, they're standing up. No, they're stood up so they can continue to talk. Oh, my gosh. I can't do it. Good night, Louise.
Good night.
At least in Westerns, they would shoot somebody every once in a while.
They make sure to shoot everybody.
Yeah, every once in a while. Sometimes you shoot somebody, and then sometimes you shoot everybody. But that's usually at the end of the movie.
So the weasel's knocking the door. Let us in, Valiant. We just want the rabbit.
We just want the rabbit.
And Roger's like, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Valiant's like, what's this wee stuff? They just want the rabbit. And instead of just, you know, breaking the glass or somehow kicking the door in, the weasels decide they're going to shoot the doorknob off.
I mean, it's so cartoonish.
Well, it's so Dick Tracy, you know?
Yeah. With the Dick Tracy weasel sauntering in with his gun pulled.
And then the weasels come in looking around. They don't see Valiant or Roger Rabbit. And then they come around, they find Eddie Valiant at the sink cleaning socks in his sink.
Doing the laundry.
Doing the laundry.
It's my whites. It's my dirty undies.
And so they ask him, you know, where's the rabbit? He goes, I haven't seen him. And he goes, what do you got in there? My dirty laundry.
I love how he takes one of the socks out and the weasel like smells it and like,
He walks away, and as he walks away, Roger Rabbit comes popping out of the water, you know, he's sputtering, trying to get air in, and Valiant's trying to shove him back down.
Grab his head, put it back in.
Right, and the weasel turns around in time to see him shove him down, but apparently not see Roger Rabbit and think nothing of it.
Just sort of like does the squint eye at him and then turns around and
tells them,
mind if we take a look around?
All right, boys, toss the place. Leave no stone unturned.
The weasels are so good in this.
Oh, yeah.
It's so ridiculous.
And so the lead weasel, look, Valiant, we got a reliable tip off. The rabbit was here. Plus, it was corrugated by several others. So cut the bullshtick.
Corrugated.
I swear.
Oh. Yeah, so all those people that Roger talked to called the weasels.
At least one of them did.
Yeah.
Valiant goes, you keep talking like that and I'm going to wash your mouth out. And he shoves a bar of soap in his mouth. And he just starts flying and flailing. And it's just this whole, you know, silly bit.
Yeah.
And the other weasels see it and they start laughing. And apparently with these weasels is once they start laughing, they can't stop laughing.
Yep.
And so the head weasel gets really mad. He goes, you got to stop that laughing. He picks up a plunger and starts beating him.
Laughing. Yeah.
And he turns around, he throws to the one kind of like dewy weasel guy, the guy with the top spinning hat.
Yeah.
And he throws it in his face and he gets him like he just like he spears him against the a file cabinet.
Yeah. With a plunger, right?
With the plunger. Like a plunger, right.
Yeah, right to the face. Yeah.
And he goes, if you don't stop laughing, one of these days you're gonna die laughing.
It's interesting, this scene, we don't get the judge, right?
Right.
So the last time we saw the weasels, they were with the judge, and we understood they were the judge's henchmen, but they show up on their own here, right?
Like they're on their own little squad.
Yeah. What Valiant does would not have worked on the judge, right? If he had showed up, they would have been toasted. But because it's a bunch of toons, he knows how to play them because he's been working in and out of Toontown for, you know, however long. 10 years, 20 years, whatever. And he knows like how to mess with these tunes. And he knows like, all I got to do is give them a big enough distraction and they'll just assume that he's not here and get distracted and leave. And that's what he does with the soap in the mouth and the resulting laughter fits and the, you got to stop that laughing and the, you know, the enforcement of the laughing, all of that is just a huge distraction to get them to leave the office, making them think, yeah, we searched the office, when the reality was they didn't, right? They did a little bit of searching, but they didn't completely toss the place out.
Well, they got distracted by their own shenanigans.
Yeah, that's the great things about toons. And it's funny because you see Valiant, you know, leans into it, right? Everything with Roger up to this point has been very much I don't want you here and I don't want to mess with your stupid tune antics, right?
Right.
And like the handcuffing just infuriates him. Like you son of a bitch, what did you do? You know, now I'm stuck with you. But then with the weasels, it's like, all right, fine. You can act like a bunch of tunes, I'll treat you like a bunch of tunes.
Well, it's more of like, I know who the bad guy is. I may not like the good guys, but I know who the bad guys are. So
right. And you know, so when he says, hey, you know, who's this wee stuff, they're just looking for the rabbit, you know, that comes off as a potential threat. You know, we really don't know what Valiant's going to do here, but we do know from the couple prior scenes ago that he did witness what happens to tunes in this instance, and that the judge is judge, jury, and executioner all in one, right? There's no due process for toons. The judge has like full blown authority just to kill him if he feels like it. And so he knows what's going to happen to Roger if he turns him in. And I think when he's faced with that reality, you know, on top of the fact that he's handcuffed to the guy, he decides, okay, I'm not going to turn Roger in because I don't want to be witness to yet another war crime.
Well, that, and you know, he doesn't want to be tied to Roger Rabbit. Like, he doesn't want that somehow that someone would be like, aha, you're in cahoots, you know, you're going down too. It's like, yeah, I cannot be caught with this rabbit.
Right.
after dealing with the laughing, the head weasel goes back to Valiant and goes, "As for you, Valiant, step one toe out of line and we'll hang you and your laundry out to dry." And he splashes Valiant. And that's kind of a cool scene because I kind of want to know how they did that because it actually splashed water.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's some sort of like air nozzle or something, but.
"You and your laundry out to dry. Come on, boys." Just such a classic 1920s villain.
Oh, he even says, "Let's amscray."
Let's amscray. Oh. So good. But yeah, you're right. Like the practical effects throughout this whole sequence are pretty fantastic on, you know, on top of the fact that they were animating this effectively on film, right? They were taking film and they were painting on top of it, which is amazing. Amazing what they did.
Then Roger comes sputtering out of the water, you know, and he's wringing his ears like that, like it's a cloth, you know, like a wet cloth. And he goes, "Jeepers, Eddie, thanks for saving you saved my life. How could I ever repay you?" And he jumps on him and gives him a big kiss on the mouth. And Valiant turns and just throws him off him and goes, "For starters, don't ever kiss me again." It's like you had, like we were just talking about this practical effects. Valiant had to specifically put his hands in the right place and do the right motions for the animators to paint that correctly.
Yeah, like I said before, he had to do that in such a way that it didn't make too much of a gap in small spaces that would make it painstaking for the animators to paint.
Right.
Like through his fingers or you know, through, you know, a small gap between his hands. Like the goal was always like to give Roger as much space as possible so the animators could animate him without having to worry about him behind another physical object that had a bunch of holes in it, because then it gets very hard to animate.
And so the next scene is we jump to back to the bar. We see Valiant walking in with a hat and a trench coat on, and you can see he's like kind of holding it and it's bulged up a little bit. So you pretty much know that it's Roger Rabbit in there. And he's yelling at him, "Stop kicking." You know, like it's an animal he's trying to hide, you know, "Stop kicking."
Yeah.
And you see Roger Rabbit's ears pop up and he's shoving them back down. And he's trying to get Dolores's attention. And that just as the red car is coming by, so he's yelling, "Dolores, Dolores!" And he's trying to hide the rabbit while he's yelling at her, and the whole bar is looking at him.
Such a great scene, very reminiscent of that scene in what is that Star Wars show that wasn't great? Obi-Wan, where they escape the
market
imperial thing with her inside of a trench coat because it's a kid show apparently. The imperial prison.
Was it the prison or was it the drug den?
No, it was the prison.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Most ridiculous thing ever.
So here's Valiant trying to cross the bar without being noticed. Somebody, of course, you know, people do notice him. And one guy yells, "Hey, Eddie, I see you made the front page." And he's like, "Yeah, I guess I made some ink," you know, just chit-chatting. All the while, he's trying to hide Roger Rabbit. And Roger comes, you know, pop it out like a jack in the box, and he tries to shove him back in and turns around, you know, to go face to face with Dolores, and she goes, "Is that a rabbit in your pocket, or are you just happy to see me?"
Right. It's one of those jokes,
right? Certainly not a joke a kid would understand.
Yeah Plenty of those in this movie.
Oh yeah.
And only a good man with some good iced tea would really understand.
Yeah, with the iced tea. Go get some iced tea.
I want some. Maybe. I think there's some up here. It's. I'm okay. I've had enough. But they're in a bar. Like, what do you want me to do? Not talk about iced tea in a bar?
Yes.
Is that what you want me to do?
Yes, because the bar is a little less. Because
that's wrong, Bruce.
It's just background, all right? The bar itself is just background. No one's talking about what they're drinking in the bar or what they're enjoying in the bar. It's just the bar.
But some people have to be enjoying a nice, tall glass of iced tea.
Yes, stipulated. Moving on.
I'm just saying. When you're trying to hide a rabbit, maybe have some iced tea. Again, amazing effects here. Obviously, they had to have something in Valiant's shirt that was like bulging in and moving it. Not exactly sure how they pulled that one off either. I assume they put a small human in there somehow. And
why not just a pillow, Pat?
Maybe a cat. So, you know, put an actual animal in there. Made it had it really rustle around a lot. Bob Hoskins went to the hospital 4 times during the filming of this movie because of all the practical effects.
Those of you listening to this, none of that is factual. He doesn't know that. He's just making it up because he's on the internet and he knows he can just say whatever he wants.
Yeah, as I talk, I make, yes, that's correct. Everything Bruce said for once in his life
was correct. Okay, so Dolores takes him back into a speakeasy room where Eddie's going to try to cut himself out of these handcuffs.
Yeah, he saw on the back because it was an old speakeasy, right? We're past that time frame. America has woken up from the why did we pass prohibition and unpass prohibition and has now moved on to bars being a fully legal enterprise again. And so the speakeasy room is no longer necessary.
Dolores is explaining this and that. And of course, like a kid just put into some place he's never been before, he's got to just run around the place, and he sees the peephole and drags Eddie over to the peephole, knocking crap over, and he's looking out of it, and you can see he's looking left, right, and as he looks left, his eyes bulge out of the peepholes and knocks over a bottle and then, you know, gets pulled back in, you know, just to show the cartoony physics of Roger Rabbit.
Yeah. So while Hoskins was not necessarily injured during the filming of Roger Rabbit, he did spend several months after filming hallucinating characters from the film in his daily life, because filming for that movie took 8 months. So he spent 8 months talking to imaginary characters and then spent time afterwards continuing to talk to imaginary
characters.
You
went looking for trivia just so you could say something factual?
Yes. Yes, I am, you son of a... Back to my iced tea.
Back to your iced tea. Sent Pat back into the loving arms of iced tea. Yeah. All right. And he gets the saw out of the tool bag and he brings Roger over, you know, next to this bench and gets a crate so that way he can put his hand on there. And he starts trying to saw the handcuffs, and the crate is just rocking back and forth. And he yells at Roger, "Hold still." So Roger comes out of the cuffs and holds the crate still. And he's like, "Is this better?" He goes, "Yeah, thanks." And it takes him 2 seconds of sawing and goes, "Wait a minute." And he looks right at him and goes, "You're tight." And Roger quickly goes back into the cuffs and he goes, "You mean you could have gotten yourself out of those cuffs at any time?" He goes, "No, only when it was funny."
Which, you know, plays into the psychology / mentality of Toons, right? Like, they can only do this thing, even though this thing is just a physical interaction with reality, which should be governed by the general laws of physics. Toons also apparently have an extra thing on them, whereas they have to act within their drawn nature, right? Which is why, you know, I think that's one of the things kind of inherent and underneath a lot of what goes on in this movie is you have, even when these cartoon characters are brought into a real world framework, they still act the way they were drawn. Right. So the gorilla in the monkey suit still acts like a gorilla in the monkey suit. The, you know, octopus bartender, as an octopus, you could see him doing a very similar thing in a cartoon. And as a bartender, still acts the same way. Jessica Rabbit as a showgirl effectively acts like a showgirl because that's what she says. "I'm not bad. I'm just drawn that way." You know, Roger is inherently made to be a, or however creation works for these things, created to be a funny character. And so that is at his core. He can't take an action unless it's funny, right? Unless it's driven towards humor or comedy or something like that. I like the scene we have coming up, which talks about the power of humor, but it's a throwback to that. So once we see with all of these characters is that their nature and how they interact with the world around them is actually built into who they are. And, you know, just because in physical reality, like, yeah, if you're skinny enough to get in and out of a pair of handcuffs, you're always skinny enough to get in and out of a pair of handcuffs. Roger Rabbit's not. He can only do it when it's funny.
Right. But he also doesn't have to risk breaking bones or anything like that. He just morphs into it because, you know, he's a cartoon. He doesn't have bones. He doesn't have these things, you know, that restrain other, you know, mortal people.
Yeah, you know, effectively the real world laws of physics do not apply to the cartoons.
And right.
We get that right away with Dumbo flying outside the outside the window at the very beginning, because doesn't matter how big your ears are, elephants can't fly. Like, not in real life. Sorry to break it to you, folks.
And I kind of think that's why they do a lot of this too, is because I think the whole idea in this movie is that how wonderful would it be if cartoons could be in the real world, you know, our lives would be normal, but not boring, you know?
Yeah.
Certainly if you lived in Hollywood, California.
It's sort of this set of kind of whimsy built into it. I also think it's kind of an interesting take on a more extreme version of, you know, what people are built for, right? So the nature versus nurture concept of what makes a person do the things they do, what makes a person tick, right? And, you know, for the Toons, it's far, far clearer that their nature is, you know, far more tied to their what they were created for than your average human, maybe, right? Like, it's sort of an extreme example of that.
Toons have no question of what their purpose in life is, which is to entertain one way or the other. Like, Roger Rabbit is, you know, his purpose in life is to make people laugh. If he couldn't do it in a cartoon, he'd find some other way, you know, panhandling jokes on the side of the sidewalk, you know?
Yeah.
You know, so there's no question of their existence and what they're put on this earth to do, unlike, you know, human beings, which is an interesting contrast.
Yeah.
So after Roger Rabbit gets out of the cuffs, you know, Eddie continues to saw, you know, at his handcuffs and says that you're going to be in a whole lot more trouble if I can't figure out what happened to this. And he throws the picture to Dolores, and, you know, she unravels it and shows it to Roger. And it's the picture from before, Marvin Acme and Jessica Rabbit, you know, doing patty cake. And then the will is circled in the pocket. And, you know, they both realize that, oh, this is a big deal. You know, Eddie Valiant says, I think Maroon played the part of sound mind and your wife the part of the sound body, you know, to this whole scheme. Of course, yeah. Roger's like, I resent that innuendo.
Yeah. And this is, you know, this is the scene where, quote unquote, the plot thickens, right?
Right.
So as Eddie Valiant is discovering that, yeah, there actually is a will and the baby was right, we are immediately thrown from that into the zaniness that is, you know, Roger Rabbit and then the weasels. So we kind of forget about it, right? But this scene sort of brings it back to the forefront, and that's what Eddie's been thinking all along. And what he proposes here is that somebody framed Roger Rabbit. He said the movie's name. So it takes a while for us to finally get there, but we get to the point of the story, right? Acme was killed because of the will, because they didn't find the will. There's something going on. In order to clear Roger, they've got to find the will, because that's why Acme was killed, and not because Roger did it in a drunken rampage. I mean, he did take that one drink.
Right, but he didn't take it well, so yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So in that, you know, he didn't kill Acme in a rampage. Acme was killed for the will, because the will wasn't on the body. So that's the question now that we have posed to us, or posed to Dolores and to Roger, is that somebody has framed you, Roger. And it's interesting that Eddie proposes the Maroon and Mrs. Roger Rabbit,
Jessica Rabbit,
as the culprits. You know, these are the two proposed framers, right? Because in Valiant's mind, he assumes Maroon will get some portion of Toontown, or will get Toontown, if the will isn't found and Toontown isn't given over to the Toons. But that's an assumption Eddie makes. He doesn't actually know. And that's sort of where, you know, we as the audience are in the same dark hole as Eddie Valiant. We don't know who gets Toontown if the will isn't found.
And so that's why he tells Dolores that he needs her to go down to the city hall and go to the probate office, indicating that he wants to see who owns Toontown if the will is never found. You know, if there's no will and testament of where Toontown goes to.
For those who don't know, because you're young, probate office is the government office that deals with matters of the dead. So whether you have a will or not, everything has to go through probate. So if somebody dies and the figuring out what happens to their effects, what happens to their debts, what happens to their stuff, you know, what happens to all the legal stuff that they were tied to goes through probate. And probate effectively then ends up getting you the death certificate at the end of the day. But they kind of ratify the will. They figure out, you know, the legality of it. And then if there is no will, they have the whatever rules made by the city, state, county slash federal rules that are made that come into effect. And so that's what probate is. It's part of the court system effectively. And it's sort of matters of dealing with the legal matters of death. If you have a loved one that passes on, you're going to have to deal with probate court. You know, if you get named the executor of the will, God help you. And I mean that really. I hope God helps you.
And so next comes a little bit of a few lines that I always, you know, remember from this movie. And Roger goes, yeah, check the probate. My uncle Thumper, he once had a problem with his probate and he had to take these big pills and drink lots of water. And Valiant's like, not prostate, you idiot. Probate.
Probate.
And so then the, you know, what Eddie's thinking gets said in plain English now by Roger Rabbit. He goes, so you think that he had Marvin Acme killed just so he can get his hands on Toontown? And at that moment, Eddie breaks the cuffs, you know, saws through the cuffs, gets out of the cuffs and goes, yep, that's my hunch. And then he turns to Dolores, go, can he stay here for a couple of days? And she goes, oh, no, see, he's not going to do anything crazy, is he? At that moment, Roger's holding his ears and he's got a chisel that he's putting through his ears, like
through his ears, like, through his brain, effectively going one in ear and out the other and sawing. In typical Toon fashion. We'll stop it here.
So we effectively went through 12 minutes of film. You know, after your tirades about iced tea.
Oh, strap in, folks. this is not going to get any faster.
There's plenty more tea in this movie.
There's plenty more iced tea in this movie for y'all. Hey, but this is what we do on Pat the Fat Man. It's ultra deep dives and plenty of interludes. And for those of you who are patrons, we very much appreciate your contributions to the show, keeping us on the air, helping us pay our editor. And
thank you, Patreons.
Yes. So if you'd like to become one of the select few Patreons who can tell us what they want us to do, because that's what we let our patrons do, is order us around, go to PatAndTheFatMan.com and click on the Patreon button. It will take you to Patreon where you can become a patron for $1 or $2 or $10 or $20, however much you want to give us a month. We think we're probably worth at least $1 if we've made you laugh at least once. Remember, laughter is good for the soul. We'll talk about that a lot more in the next episode. If you'd like to help us make that next episode, please consider becoming a patron. We could really use your help. Other than that, remember to visit the website, patandthefatman.com. We're on Facebook, Pat and the Fat Man, on Instagram, at Pat and the Fat Man, and on X, at the Fat Man, 1238. If I remember that, my iced tea addled mind. The saddest part is I tried for like 10 minutes to get an iced tea at Sonic and I couldn't get the thing to work. So I drove away. So
that's what this is. A Freudian tantrum about not getting your iced tea at Sonic.
Like, I do it right. I put like cherries in there and strawberries and lime juice. It's a heck of an iced tea, folks.
Or, you know, you could go to a real restaurant like an adult.
Look, we talked about Baby Herman already. And his stretched out adolescence. Anyways, thank you all for joining us. I'm Pat.
I'm the Fat Man.
Stay classy.
Keep listening to us, please. Gonna go get some iced tea there.
Glug, 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 glug. And now, time for the weather. It's raining iced tea. Yeah, yeah.